Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And we are here every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we stream live at richarddugan.com as well as newspress.com. So we hope that you will take advantage. We hope you'll join us, whether it's in the morning or in the evening or late night, overnight, if you will, depending upon where you are, even around the world, for that matter. We are very excited to bring these programs to you. This Peabody Award-nominated program, we are excited about that as well. So we hope to have some incredibly exciting news coming up very, very soon. Our program today dives into a question that it persists in everyone's mind, I think, from time to time. Do you ever feel as if you're searching for yourself? You remember that old line from the 60s, the hippie movement of the U.S., that I'm going to go find myself. And, of course, I've quoted that old poem by Tiberius about how the gods were concerned that man was going to find out how to become like them, and so they needed to hide that information, that knowledge about man somewhere. They tried the mountaintops, they tried the deep seas, they tried outer space, they tried all these different places, but could never come up with an idea until one said, let's hide it in his heart, he'll never look there. Well, we're going to delve into that aspect of our program today with the author of The Dolphin's Dance. It is Discovering Yourself Through a Powerful Five-Step Journey into Conscious Awareness. My guest is Micheline Nader, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard. I'm so excited to be on your program and talk about the Dolphin's Dance.
I know that from a very literal standpoint, there are people who absolutely love to have the opportunity to go and swim with the dolphins. And in a manner of speaking, that's their dance, if you will. But we're going to dive a little deeper than that, I think, into this subject as well. And this subject continually comes up. I have to say that I just recently watched the movie Whiplash, Academy Award-winning actor in that, and just the storyline. I was totally unaware of, I mean, I knew it was about music and a drummer and blah, blah, blah. But it was really fascinating to watch this young man pursue supposedly what was his dream. And at one point, he tells his would-be girlfriend, I want to be great. And then he modifies to say, I just want to be one of the greats. And I have to wonder if maybe he should have stuck with the first phrase, because it doesn't mean that you're going to be the greatest. It just means that you're going to accomplish something in your life, in defining your life's purpose, that may or may not awe others, but it's certainly going to bring fulfillment to your life. Can we talk a little bit about the pursuit of one's, not only, we'll definitely go into self because it's all tied together, but one's purpose? Because that question keeps coming up around me with people I know. You know, they hear the phrase, you need to find your purpose in life. And they ask, well, how do I find that?
That's a very, very, very good question, Richard. And I like that we are starting from the end in a way, because in the Dolphin's Dance process, after you finish your process, or while going through your process, you discover that by aligning your inner consciousness to higher consciousness, you're already in your purpose, as if you don't have to look for your purpose, because your purpose is looking for you when you become the space for it to manifest itself in the world. And that was so true for me, because I looked for my purpose and I searched, and I was doing great in my job, whatever I did, I loved, and whatever I immersed myself in, I gave my 100%, but I didn't know what was my purpose in life. Once I discovered that every one of us has his own purpose in life, and his purpose in life actually comes from his alignment with higher consciousness and conscious awareness, that became so easy, because then you allow yourself to be who you are, and you attract to yourself the experiences that you love, and de facto you eliminate everything that you don't love. So if you're struggling to know what is your basic talent, I mean, the basic talent is obvious to most people, but if you're struggling with that, it will become easy to you once you discover your true self.
Discovering one's true self is certainly a challenge for many folks. It's very, very interesting to, again, to pursue these lines because, again, no one can tell you. You have to find it for yourself. And I think that that's one of those aspects that, as much as we would like to, for example, I might consider, say, my mentor to be a wise person and to be able to provide me with some guidance of some sort. But even to ask my mentor to help me to find my purpose, that is, I would have to say, to the very least, that's a little inappropriate, don't you think?
It is very personal. I mean, your mentor could help you with the questions, but you're very—it's—you're exactly on, Richard. No one can do the work for you. It's very personal. It entails really diving in and discovering what's there. It's not a difficult pursuit. We sometimes think that it is because we think that, you know what, the domain of true self belongs to enlightened people or spiritual people. Actually, not at all. When we were born with our true self. We cluttered our true self in a way that it became not apparent to us. We have to dig now. We have to dive like the dolphin dives in order to find it. But it's easy. It's as if you're removing the clutter from the space within in order to connect with your true self. And your true self is who you are, really. Nothing mystique about it. We gave it to the mystiques. We gave it to psychologists. We gave it to transformational people. But actually, all that we've got is ourself. That's why in the dolphins process, it's interesting because we use what we have in the now, what's appearing in our life that is not making us feel good. And those signals are portals into diving in and discovering our true self.
Where does the dolphin come into this? Again, as I mentioned at the front end, I mean, people love dolphins. They consider them to be probably one of the smartest creatures on the planet, most intelligent. They can communicate and so forth, and we're beginning to sort of learn that language of sorts. And it's not really that hard. If you spend enough time around them, I suppose you can decipher the code. I know that for myself, with our three dogs, I can... you know, I'm not that great at this point, but I'm getting better at understanding the different sounds that each of the dogs makes for a particular reason, depending upon the pitch, especially of the sounds coming from their throat in terms of a bark and what have you. So how does a dolphin, I want to say metaphor or symbology, if you will, of the dolphin?
So, Richard, it's a very good question, and actually I talk about it, about the story in my book. I was meditating one day on what is my mission exactly? What is my purpose in life? Because that was my eternal question. And sat down in meditation for a few minutes, and all that I could see was a dolphin. Back then, I didn't know about dolphins much. That same day, I went and I had lunch with a friend who came in and she was late. She was like 5 minutes late and she said, I apologize for my lateness. I saw something that I needed to get for you. And she took it out of the box and it was a dolphin. It's a dolphin statue in crystal, blue dolphin. I did not make the connection until I started writing about this process. And I found that this could be the best metaphor and symbol. I did not know why. I started laughing. Like, how could you meditate on your purpose in life, on your mission, and you see an image of a dolphin? It was like funny. And then I realized that it was the perfect symbol and metaphor, as you said, because the dolphin, with its flow, it reminds us of this movement of conscious awareness. It appears above the water, disappears. It dives in, so we have to dive in to discover our true self. Its developed brain reminds us of conscious awareness. And believe it or not, I used its flip to remind me how to flip my stories and continue with the dance, my inner dance and also the cosmic dance of the universe. Its playfulness also reminds us of this joy and ease. And actually, this is what everybody wants. We want to be able to live life fully, express ourselves to the fullest, be free from the traumas and the limiting patterns, and we want to be joyful and play. So the playfulness of the dolphin also is very important, and that could be one of the benefits after we complete the process of the dolphin's dance.
We're talking with Micheline Nader, and she's the author of The Dolphin's Dance, Discovering Your True Self Through a Powerful Five-Step Journey into Self-Awareness. And I am fascinated by something you said earlier. I'd like for us to maybe discuss a little bit more, and that is the aspect of finding one's purpose and drawing to oneself through that process those people and experiences that benefit, if you will, our purpose, and disconnecting, shall we say, from those people and experiences that don't serve our purpose. Would you say that from that standpoint that we have the, I almost want to use the phrase inalienable right or God-given right, freedom of, I want to use this word in the proper way, freedom of discrimination, but not in the context of the popular construct, but discriminating between those elements of our personal life, our lives that serve us, and those parts that don't.
Wow. This is such an important statement that you just made, Richard. This is this discernment, actually. To be able to discern in each moment in your life if who's operating you, who's your operating system right now? Is it your ego or your true self? I mean, we hear a lot of teachers tell us about the ego, and then they say, okay, yes, well, we need the ego to live, right? It's our personality, our persona. But when we realize that the ego takes a structure, and that structure is easily identified, and we can identify those signals in the moment and become aware of who's operating. Because the ego, mainly the ego is concerned about the survival and our past experiences. So at each moment in time, if we know that the emotion that we're living right now is pertinent to the moment, then we're living in the present. If we know that this emotion is coming from a past experience that stuck to us because of a trauma or a past experience where we judged ourselves, that, oh, I'm not good enough. You know, that little voice that comes, I'm not good enough to do that. Because this comes from the past. If we can distinguish and discern who's operating right now, then it becomes easy. We're bringing conscious awareness to our experience of the moment, and we're able to shift it. And in the dolphin's dance, we have a process, we have a tool, we have an access to determine this, and we have a method that is very easy to be able to shift it as well.
This began for you at a very early age, and you were asking the kinds of questions that some folks don't want to admit to because they don't want to be ostracized from whatever group or institution they may be a part of. I was born and raised under the banner of Catholicism, but I was asking in my late teens and early 20s these kinds of big life questions, and the answers that I was being given, they just didn't resonate with me. Tell me about the kinds of questions that you were asking at such an early age. I mean, we're talking here about, you know, 6, 7 years of age that you were just like, this doesn't make sense to me. Where are the answers? Where do I find these answers?
Right. Since I was young, I was born under the Catholicism also. And we used to go to church on Sunday. And I've always been a believer of a power. Although I went to church, I never believed that God is someone like sitting upstairs, you know, or in the sky looking at us and, you know, looking at me, giving me what I want right now and not giving the other person what he wants. And why is the other person paralyzed and why am I not or blind? You know, it didn't make sense to me what the normal, let's say, believer believed in. But what made sense to me, that I felt that I was not only my body. I felt connected to a higher power. I felt that someone was with me all the time. And I didn't know how to categorize or qualify this. And early in my age, I was lucky to have some dreams that I didn't understand, but yet the dreams were great. It was about mystiques. Like I dreamt one day of a woman who gave me healing to my grandmother who was dying. And that day, what I discovered was that this woman that I saw was Santa Rita. And I did not know anything about Santa Rita back then. So I had dreams that were out of the ordinary, that prompted me also to go beyond that. What religion was explaining was good, but was not enough for me, because it was a consensus that we as human beings found in the text, and that is very peculiar to a certain era in our life or in our culture. But spirituality was more for me. It was the mystique part of religion that attracted me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd have to say that for me, it's kind of the same thing. I never, in spite of my 15 years working for a Christian radio station, I never formally left the Catholic Church. I never pushed away from it, which is, as a matter of fact, one of the things my mother worked very hard to keep me from doing, not leaving the church, but making it an enemy. And I still have a deep fondness for many of the aspects thereof and many of the people that I became associated with, and even some of the conversations that I would have. I remember one Monsignor, he used to come over to our house after I was married, and they did the house blessing. And I remember afterwards asking him some very pointed questions. And the answers that he gave me were, I was blown away by the fact that they weren't part of the catechism, if you will. I'm thinking, wow, here's this guy. He's a Monsignor within this institution. And even he doesn't toe the party line, as it were. And I just found that so fascinating. And I thought, wow, maybe there's still hope for the world after all.
Yeah, you know, it is fascinating, and I hope that this will not stop people from their religion. I believe that in every religion, there is this mystique part, the mysticism of every religion. In the Catholic religion, we have so many healers, Richard. Like, I came to this conclusion after, you know, I studied so many religions, from Buddhism to Hinduism to, you know, everything in between. And I found out that in every religion, you can find the mystiques. In the Jewish religion, you can find the Kabbalah. I mean, it's so wonderful. And in the Christian and Catholic part of it, we have some saints who were really healers. I mean, Saint Francis of Assisi, Padre Pio. We can learn so much from them. So I learned not to throw the baby with the water. Mm-hmm. And I know that some priests are not open to that. But I learned also to go and find for myself the answers that I'm looking for within that. And we can find them.
But that also goes back to what you said earlier, too, about the discerning and being on purpose, if you will, or seeking one's life purpose. You draw to you those people who are going to, maybe they won't give you the answers that you're, the absolute answers you're looking for, but at least they sort of steer you in another direction. They don't shut you down. Whereas I remember asking all of these different questions and being told, "Oh, just go read the writings of the founders of the faith," mm-hmm. and most of them I'd never heard of before. And two questions came up when that statement was made to me. Well, first of all, who made them the founders? Who said that they had all of the answers? Number one, and number two, if I came up with those questions independent of the knowledge of these individuals, does that put me in the same class with them in that regard? You know, not to put myself up on a pedestal by any means, but if they were asking these questions, now I'm asking them too, and I've never heard of these individuals, you know, I have the same curiosity that they did, and maybe in one sense, unfortunately, they got locked into a system they couldn't get out of, until death. But I think it's extremely important for us to seek the guidance, but always remember that it's entirely our responsibility. Tough word for some people to take on.
Yes, it is our responsibility. And actually, in the Dolphins Dance, I talk about conscious awareness. And I feel that if you want to become a consciously aware person and bring conscious awareness to every moment in your life, you got to question all these beliefs. And the principle of it is to create as much space between you and the beliefs, because the more you question the beliefs, the more you're not inheriting and automating something that comes from somewhere else into your life. But the more you close the gap between you and inner consciousness, and higher consciousness is where conscious awareness lives. So you widen the gap between you and your thoughts, you and your beliefs, you and your the form that you're identifying with, you and anything, and you close the gap on you and your inner self.
Interesting to dialogue about these things with my guest. Her name is Micheline Nader. She's the author of Dolphin Dance, and it is a book that helps you to discover your true self through a powerful 5-step journey into conscious awareness. We're going to continue our program here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Micheline Nader. She is the author of The Dolphin Dance, and we're talking about one's life purpose and finding it, finding yourself. And I guess one of the thoughts that comes to mind going back, because this journey for you began for you in childhood, I don't know that I can say that mine was, I have one of those official, unofficial dates. I was 17. That's the best I can tell you. I have 365 days in there I could choose from when I began what I called my search. And I'm wondering about the challenge that we have as spiritual beings in this world, waking up, becoming more consciously aware of self and our surroundings and what this is really all about and what it really is. And I remember as a kid thinking that I was like this individual who was inside this giant machine called a boy's body. and I was viewing out the eyes and hearing through the ears and on the senses, but that the rest of the world, the rest of the universe was here for me. And in one sense, I was all alone. I'm not sure if I was trying to support a feeling of uniqueness that was sort of supported by the bullies in the school, or if it was something else. But that was a thought that went through my mind as I was growing up, that there was nobody else in the universe, let alone on the planet, who was like me. I was the only one who was inside, who was aware that I was inside this machine, shall we say. It's like some of the science fiction programs we've seen, where you see a man getting inside one of these big metal boxes, if you will, or robots, and controlling it from the inside. And that's how I felt. And I've come to realize that I'm not alone in that regard, mm-hmm. that we're all in that same space, if you will, or place. We're just not all aware that that's where we are. And I'm wondering how you came to that, your own realization of that general concept.
It's very interesting what you're saying, Richard. Actually, this is a paradox. And your uniqueness is not bad. Actually, your uniqueness is this, also the way your purpose is going to express itself, because every one of us has a unique purpose. It has something different, yet we are one. So this is the biggest paradox, to understand that if I love someone, I'm loving myself at the same time, and know that at that same time, we are unique in what we're bringing. And because your question was about purpose, that uniqueness is not bad. That uniqueness actually should be honored and should be made like a space for higher consciousness to use us through this uniqueness. Because let's say your unique talent may be to ask the right questions or to dig. And through your questions, your audience comes to an awareness about themselves. Maybe my uniqueness is to put things that look very big and people cannot understand, put them together in an easy, simple way that people could use. And those uniqueness are great, because this is actually, this is your mission in life. The challenge that you referred to, Richard, is to discover that uniqueness. So uniqueness is not a synonym of individualism. Uniqueness is that mission, that great thing, that the flow, that the source has created in you to express itself as a human being. If you're a spiritual being having a human experience, you're having your human experience for you, but also you're having your human experience as a contribution to the universe. And this is where uniqueness plays a big role.
That raises an interesting question that someone brought to my attention when we were discussing one's life purpose. And it was a sort of a tough pill to swallow in this context, because this person was sharing their idea that every person who has ever lived, lives or will live on this planet, is living out their purpose. Now, we will judge their actions as good or bad, appropriate or inappropriate, you know, and so forth. But the reality is that they're here to do what they're doing. And it is our purpose to respond in a way that isn't reacting, that sort of has a betterment for mankind. Mm-hmm. And I realize that that's a tough one for folks to maybe understand, but I thought, really? So you're telling me that whether it be Mother Teresa or Pope Francis or Idi Amin or Saddam Hussein or Hitler. They were just living out their life's purpose. And the answer was yes, because we had all chosen to come here to have these different experiences. And so from a universal standpoint, there's no judgment. It's just that's the play that was performed at that time. That's all it was. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that we have to get out of our own way in order for the evolutionary impulse to express itself through us. And my thoughts are, despite having a mission, any purpose, not all of us live our purpose because we are in the way of our purpose. As you said, if we don't clear and clean the clutter and all this, I can't do this. Sometimes the purpose, the impulse wants to express itself through you, but you don't let it. Because either you are micromanaging it or because you don't believe in yourself. You think, oh, I'm not good enough to do that. Mm. Yet you were born to do it. So in a way, this impulse is going to express itself, but some of us will not live that purpose to the fullest. And if, like Hitler, if he was living his purpose and then he strayed from it, to, hurt humanity. Well, we're acting against the flow. So I believe that everyone has his purpose in life and we all start wanting to express it. And then what happens in life, we get traumatized or we get experiences that clutter and condition our inner self, and we become disconnected from the true self who we are and disconnected from higher consciousness and our purpose in life. So I wish that the only thing I wish for us is to be able to just unclutter all this conditioning and be open for higher consciousness to act through us, to get out of its way, so we can express our purpose to its fullest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, the other element of this is that all of these individuals came here doing what they did, you know, on this particular stage to teach us the things that we wanted in our lives and also those things that we really don't want in our lives. And, whether that be true or not, I don't know. It just that was an observation this person made to me in that regard, that how would we know the difference if we didn't have these kinds of extremes, if you will, to weigh and say, well, okay, yeah, I like that. I want to go that direction, you know. Or no, I don't want to go that direction, and I don't want humanity to go that direction either. Where does the... And here's an interesting question that has been formulated since we've been doing some programs focusing on the power of the heart, the not just the physical blood pumping muscle, but the heart of if you will, or our soul. Some say that's where the soul resides. I don't know. And then there is that still small voice, that gut feeling, that intuition. In your perspective, is there a difference between those two? And
I go back to your question. I feel that the heart of everything is an emotion. That's why I focused on dissociating that emotion. It's like the fuel. It's like this energy in motion. So behind this little voice, there is an emotion because it came from an experience, early experience in life where we judged ourselves or we bought into someone who judged us and we bought into his idea and we bought into this voice or this verdict about ourselves, and this is in the way. And that's why if we can dissociate, if we can isolate that emotion, we're able then to live our life recognizing this emotion and not have that emotion have the power over us, we can have the power over it. Like everything, as you said, Richard, everything that happens in life has a purpose. Yeah, we learn, and it's very important that we acknowledge that we learn from our experiences. And these, any experience, whether it's good or bad or whatever we judge, is not good or bad. It is really here to teach us something. Mm-hmm. Yet, behind that experience, there is this judgment, there is this negative charge. So what I talk about in the Dolphin's Dance is not about eliminating your negative experience. You can never eliminate your negative experiences. You will have to just be grateful for your negative experiences because they taught you something. But what you can affect is the negative charge behind the negative experiences. So that charge is that you judge yourself. I judge myself for the longest time, being good or bad. Because I acted this way with my mom, I was good. Or I acted that way with my mom, I yelled at her, I was bad. So we find that most of our experiences are experiences that live within us as a judgment of the experience itself and as a charge. It's either a positive charge or a negative charge. And by acting on that charge, we're able to really cancel the polarity from our experiences and yet be with the experience itself, embrace it, learn from it, be grateful to it, yet eliminate that charge, that emotional charge that is in the way between us and us, between us and our true self, really.
Now, as you said earlier, we do tend to get in our own way, and and sometimes it's hard not to, just because we want to be so involved in the process. Someone told me long ago, he said, "Stop trying to control the process and just be part of the process," mm-hmm. and life will flow along much, much smoother.
Yes, I mean, we have nothing to discover; we have everything to uncover, unveil, unearth. What is there?
When we talk about these five steps, the five-step process, we are talking about some very interesting elements that we've already discussed. One that you elaborated on quite well: discover your emotions, awaken to your release, your beliefs, name your patterns, cancel your polarities that you just spoke about, and embrace your true self. And one of the interesting things, every time I get in a conversation about beliefs, I'm always drawn back to something that one of my previous guests, Greg Braden, talked about in his book, the Spontaneous Healing of Belief. And he said basically that what we're trying to do is we're trying to work from a position of belief to that of knowing, mm-hmm. that belief will become irrelevant. Because we'll know. Yes. We won't need to believe anymore.
Yes. Actually, I love Greg Braden. He's a great teacher, and he inspired me a lot in my life. I totally agree. But how do we do that?
That's the question.
Okay. So this is what I struggled with a lot in my life until I decided that I wanted to create something that works and that is repeatable enough and easy enough to be able to shift it. Because I knew that, but I wasn't able to do it. Like, I was able to do it, of course, but then it won't stay. I didn't have a tool or an access to something that could shift it and transform it. And that's very true, because our beliefs manage us, especially those core beliefs. They delineate who we think we are. They determine the way we live our life. They shape our actions and our reactions. And a lot of our beliefs, as we talked earlier on the show, we inherited them, you know, from mm-hmm. our parents, people who we lived with, our society, our culture. And we didn't have a space between these beliefs and us. But in the Dolphin's Dance, I particularly focus on those beliefs, core beliefs, that we have about ourselves, because we discover that these core beliefs are in the way of being fully expressed and be free from our past. So these core negative beliefs become very important, and I go to isolate the emotion behind the belief to be able to, at any point, if anything shows up, if a belief shows up in my life or an emotion shows up in my life, I would know that this is a portal to apply the Dolphin's Dance process and shift it in the moment.
It seems to me that this is so important, and you've simplified it down into five steps, which I think is wonderful. I'm wondering if you hold any kind of workshops or gatherings to guide people through this, or if you do this using even what we're using today, Skype, to assist someone who is kind of struggling with this whole process. And not that it's, again, we're not talking about a technical manual here. It's just written in plain English. But still, there are those who they will learn so much better through some kind of one-on-one guidance.
Yes, like that's the plan. The Dolphin's Dance has been launched right now 2 weeks ago. It's very new. I have a few workshops that are scheduled. My intention would be in the future to do webinars. Although I would want to say that the way it's written and the way the process is done, because you said it earlier, Richard, that we do the work, is very easy to do the work. And a lot of the people who are doing the Dolphin's Dance process or were part of the focus group when I tested the method found it very easy to do because it's experiential. But at the same time, it's not heavy. I bring my own stories as an example. So I put myself on the line as an example of any concept. So we dive in with our personal stories. Then we bring conscious awareness to the stories through a simple process. The first three steps of the dance help to dive in and discover our emotional logo, our identity signature, our patterns. And then the last two steps of the dance is where we have a choice to change it. And it's easy through, each chapter has exercises in it that we do at our own pace. With the book comes a free workbook that they can download on my website that will assist in doing the exercise. So it's an easy approach, and I would love, I'm going to do workshops and webinars, but a lot of people have found that applying, they have everything in the book. I did not withheld anything from the reader. I had it all there, and I tried to simplify it as much as I could because I wanted to be a total contribution.
You can find out more by going to michelinenader.com. That's michelinenader.com. I paused there just for emphasis, as it were. And Michelinenader, the author of The Dolphin Dance, before we wrap up the program, a few questions, final questions for you. And again, thank you so much for your time and sharing with us your thoughts and your story here. Who is Michelinenader?
Okay. I am, like everyone else, a spiritual being having a human experience of conscious awareness. I have fun with it. I share my lessons and my talent in the world. My talent is to demystify the big picture and make it pragmatic to contribute effectively to conscious awareness.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I hope to make a difference in consciousness that is translated in our daily life of fulfillment and happiness.
And you've touched upon this earlier in the interview, but who else inspires you?
I am inspired by every human being who is on my path. I was inspired, and I'm still inspired by many teachers, masters, healers, authors, Eckhart Tolle, Wayne Dyer, Greg Braden, you said, Deepak Chopra, Oprah Winfrey, everybody. But also I'm inspired by nature, by the animals. My dogs teach me so much. To be present in the moment is to be present with them. I get the best lessons. I'm particularly inspired by the dolphins of the sea as well.
Well, one area that I really did want to get into that we didn't have time, and I would love to have you back again to talk further about this. So if you happen to find yourself here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation continue talking about the dolphin dance.
I would love that, Richard. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
You're very welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.